Accession number 13717, Lieutenant Colonel Charles G. Reel 10.
Colonel G, Reel 10. Now, we'd come to the point just after the armistice where you'd handed in your excess stores and equipment. Yes. And were just about to set off for Germany. This would be about 16th or 17th of November.
About 16th or 17th of November. And it was a little exciting at first because every bridge had a mine on it. You could see the mine, and we didn't know whether it was defused, but they in fact all were. On our route, but we kept hearing mines going off to the right and left of us. In fact, on one occasion there was quite a bit of shooting. Some Germans had not been told there was an armistice, but it was clear away from us. We just heard it. And coming to Belgian villages was an absolute treat. They all knew we were coming, and they frequently came out about a mile to meet us and cheered. Every man had a Belgian flag stuck at the end of his rifle, and they were absolutely thrilled. And it really seemed worth fighting the war to get Germans out of Belgium.
How did they? I mean, in the Second World War, the collaborators were treated very badly amongst civilian population, amongst themselves. Was there any sign of that?
No, I don't think so. It was absolutely enormous, like the triumphal arches, sometimes bands meeting us. And as far as I know, and I think I would know, they did the billeting for us. We just arrived, we knew we had to go somewhere, and we got there, and they pushed a little house for the officers, and 10 men in each house or something, and they fraternized with the Belgians, who obviously had very little food, and then after a bit we began to run out of food, because by the time we reached Germany, we were 2.5 days minus in food. And one morning, I remember particularly, cold, frosty morning, I told the colonel on parade we were going to march about 15 miles and do some work on a road. I told the colonel that the battalion had no breakfast, the rations hadn't come. He said, I'll speak to them. He spoke to them very effectively. Men, you have just taken part in the most comfortable war in history. And in many ways that was true, with concert parties and leave and issues of toilet paper and canteens and everything. But it's not appeared in the papers to all talk about the mud and the casualties. And it wasn't until after the war that I realized that almost everybody wounded was in hospital and had had his operation before he felt the wound, serious wound. And so it was many, and hardly anybody died of wounds, as in the Boer War, an enormous number. Enormous percentage of the wounds died in Africa. Not many episodes of the journey, except that one that illustrates how friendly the Belgians were. Some Belgian were all hogging round a fire, I suppose, in the sitting room of a house. Some Belgian wanted to know how a rifle worked. Some who never used one, but had carried one for 4 years, started showing them and shot somebody's toe off. But they didn't seem to mind. They thought it was normal, I think. However, we marched on, everybody happy. Colonel and I walked all the way to Germany behind our horses. I frequently dropped back to the back of the column to see if they're all right and came on. Of course, we didn't march 140 to Minute. I never have marched that, but I liked stepping out a bit, and so I used to drop back and watch them all and then catch up again.
Why didn't they march? Because they were light infantry.
We couldn't do so much often marching with other people, and timing marches if you had stopped in the war. things like the Battle of the Somme, I suppose, sort of people going in all directions. They all had to go at the same speed or it would have got nowhere. When we got to Germany, the guards were on our left on parallel roads going through better known places near Waterloo and so on. And we were going through a place we'd never heard of, but didn't have a map. When we got into Germany, a country village, we had to spend, we had to halt there, and the colonel disappeared. And people came to ask me what was happening. I said, I don't know. Eventually Crouch came back after quite a long time and said, I've been walking. Gee, I've been, turned me aside. Gee, I've been walking round the village. The people look quite human. I think we must treat them nicely. And so we billeted 8 or 10 in each house, and had a house for ourselves. And some companies were in other villages, because it was a miserable village without a shop. And life just went on, just peacetime. I did a bit of drill, and we did a bit of PT, and people...
How did you get on with the Germans? I mean...
Yeah, very friendly.
They weren't antagonistic
at all? We were very friendly.
But were they antagonistic at all?
Yes, they were friendly with us. They sold us an enormous amount of vegetables, like turnips and things. And treating them nicely was the colonel's way, and we had a very happy time.
Do you know the name of the village?
No. And after a bit... demobilization started, and I was doing, instead of having a demobilization officer, Colonel didn't come up to the orderly room much. He was learning French and trying to learn it. And he reckoned I wasn't getting enough exercise to put on a guard mounting at some village some miles away for me to go to every afternoon. Gave me a nice ride on a horse. And he came with me one day, and my horse beat his, so he got covered with mud, but he took it all right. But one episode happened there. A company commander went into Cologne on a day or night, leaving a captain in charge of the company. The dead captain that had just come out from England before the end of the war, and had had a bit too much rum on the occasion to arrest an officer, and he was left in charge. And when the colonel went round next morning, he found nothing. Every sergeant was being completely drunk. He got everybody drunk on whiskey, and we had an awful job over the court-martial, because the colonel was determined that the officer would be court-martialed. And his plan, which I carried out, was that somehow I should get two of the best sergeants to give evidence that the junior sergeant was drunk that morning. They were all drunk, so there wasn't any shadow of doubt about it. It was a question of getting any evidence. And you could hardly get private soldiers to do it. And eventually I got the thing done. And they agreed that he was drunk and signed it. And having proved a sergeant drunk, then the officer was then to be tried for getting him drunk. And so the big court-martial, some senior officer, because an officer was being tried, and it started all right. When the men came in, they said he was not drunk. Somebody said, the adjutant told us that if you smelt a cork, you were drunk within the meaning of the of drunkenness. I looked at me sourly, and I smelled him up and said exactly the same. I gave a dramatic laugh, and everybody startled at that bit. They realized they just made up this story, and they said the same words. And it was pretty phony evidence the bloke was found guilty. But it reminded me of a previous time. I laughed at the court-martial wrongly. A man was being tried for desertion Well, he'd been deserted, been caught, and he'd deserted again. I knew the story. And
what was the story?
Trial, desertion. I laughed at something or other and was told not to laugh at a man who'd been tried for his life. But when it came to the second one, and the evidence was he came back, the court came back, joined his company, and the company manager said, go and lose yourself. Well, he went and lost himself second time, so everybody laughed. And I knew that was going to crop up. But the officer was found guilty, and all was well. We got rid of him. Otherwise, I think nothing happened. Everybody was happy. The war was over. It was very cold, but we...
What kind of duties were you doing?
Fun?
What was your job? I mean, what sort of things were you dealing with yourself as adjutant?
I was doing almost nothing. I was walking with the troops, and the only thing that I can seriously remember is orders for the next day never came in till after midnight. But if you're going to get up early, it's an awful strain. And after a bit, I had to have somebody to stay up with me, because it was a very big strain sometimes. And I did literally sleep in with all those ones. I can't remember where it was, but we had orders to move at some ungodly hour. Don't know why quite. It may have been just before the end of the war. They changed them in the night, and then changed them again. And I'd been up about twice, and the last thing, when I eventually woke up, I found a pile of orders I hadn't looked at. And eventually, people, ordinary sergeant who came in, said, what time did they come? And I said, well, he said, you were wide awake. And I can't, I said, I hadn't read them, I looked at them. But cancel the last order and move at original time. I took it along with Colonel. He said, what time did it come? So I said, oh, you were quite right. You couldn't have done anything about it. And so I got away with that one.
That was actually during the war.
Actually, during the war. But the same thing after the war, it would have put everything wrong if we'd got to the wrong village or something. I had to have somebody to sit up with me. It was very tiring. Very nice place. One of the first towns we got to, we tried to have a dance for the people. But so many people turned up, you couldn't dance at all. I mean, you could hardly get in or out of the room. But they were very friendly. And the next night, we stayed there two nights. The next night, we thought we'd have a dance for the officers only and ask the girls. But the parents came, and they had to be kept out of ring of bayonets. But they were outside, and were inside, and no calm came of it. All friendly.
Was there any evidence of the turmoil that was going on in Germany at the time? They'd had revolutions, especially very short of food.
None then. None at all. I read one, that I'd never seen in the book. A man who was a British prisoner of war in a garrison town in Germany. After the war, the troops put their officers under arrest and ran the place themselves. I've never heard of that. It's obviously true. Germany must have been in a bad state, but the Cologne part wasn't. We just lived happily in the village.
What about shortage of food? Was there any sign of that?
No, that got all right. We got some Christmas stuff rather late, I think. And we were just quite happy. Colonel hardly came to the orchard room, so I could do the demobilization. We demobilized about 12. I told you about that. I think they took about 3-4 days to get to Boulogne. Broke into a rum van at night to get food. And they got rum and nothing else, and some died. But none of ours did.
Were the men looking forward to demobilisation? Were the men looking forward to demobilisation?
Oh, yes. Very much so. And they didn't find it so good when they went home, I don't think. there's a sort of vague quarrel with miners. The miners at home had done so well that people that had been away felt rather out of it. There have been lots of miner strikes in the war, and wages have been up and up and up. But that had boiled up, people bringing bad news and leave. After a bit, we moved into Cologne.
Into the town itself? Into Cologne itself?
Into Cologne itself, relieving the guards, who we were very jealous of.
Why?
Well, they'd been given new clothes to march through Belgium, and we had a lot of them in, and no backs, trousers and things. But we got a bit peeved when the men were in a cinema, and some German said the Coldstream guards washed the floor every day. Well, one, they shouldn't have if the men were sleeping there, and two, they put all the dirt under it. We had to move, had to shift it. But Cologne, the most extraordinary thing was, we paraded, and they gave us certain instructions. Notably, that there was a curfew on every night, and no German was allowed in the streets without a pass after something like 8 or. And we were given, before leaving the parade, lists of officers and other ranks, Brussels. Officially organized and the armistice thing. And of course, the men made notes of it. Within about an hour, a panic message from division to the effect that all copies had to be destroyed. And we had, well, of course, we destroyed the official written copies, but the other copies were kept. Cologne was in a bad state. The prisons were full. I think they. Anybody that disobeyed curfew orders was not fined 5 shillings or the equivalent, but asked how much money he'd got, and if he was wealthy, he was fined a huge amount or put in prison.
How was the curfew enforced?
A lot of military police.
So it wasn't your men enforcing it?
No. It didn't worry us at all. It was just Germans weren't allowed out.
No, I mean, your men weren't providing the patrols to enforce it.
No. But we were told that. A little later we were told that they were afraid of a sort of St. Bartholomew's massacre of British officers in Cologne, that they might rise up. And the Germans were very hot and bothered because the a bomb, I think, which was not very far away. I went there one day. Black French troops, and they were on leave, and I came back and said, so can we please close the orderly room and go on church parade? Well, they'd never been on church parade before. And I said, why? Well, of course you can. And they said, well, last Sunday there was a marvellous man preached, and we heard about him, and we'd like to go in case he comes again. They didn't know he was coming again. And then I walked across to the mess, and the two sentries on, and the guard came out, guard commander came out and said, could he take the guard leaving two sentries to church parade? And I said yes, and knew the reason. I had breakfast, went on church parade, and Woodbine Woolley was the person. And he turned up and preached. I can remember his text, an ordinary sort of sermon. The text was something about Saul was found among the stuff, and it was 10 minutes ordinary. He lectured them, and they were absolutely thrilled, and most often.
What about?
Just what they were to do with themselves and their lives. And they had the sort of touch that they couldn't resist, most of them. Got buses right across Cologne to hear him again at night. But a very remarkable touch of religion, and made it prove Colonel Bradford right.
Why do you mean?
And various papers, talking religion all the time, all that sort of thing. I mean, the men were easily stirred, God out. nothing, but I think this is recording it out, if you like. Australian Royal Ambassador headquarters got a bit bored of the, and we thought we'd climb the taken over in a hotel near the cathedral. I don't think we had to know what we couldn't allow us anyway. So we then went to the 6th Corps Cliveley House, German club. There were two generals asleep or something, and we obviously couldn't drink and make a noise there. So we went to an officer's brothel, and we told them quite clearly we didn't want girls, we wanted a drink. And they were friendly, and we went there quite often. And they knew when we'd come for a drink and a chatter, and they occasionally put on some sort of sex exhibition. But the interesting thing that I can't get out of my mind is that one of the girls was very young, about 17 or something, and was an Alsatian, i.e. French, not German, by race. And she said to two or three of us one night, come and see my room, would you like to? And took us out of the sort of sitting room, where we're sitting in as big as this, and showed us, it was around the corner, and a curtain, and there was a divan bed. And she said, that's where I go when people want to sleep with me. But I hate the Germans, they don't ever sleep with me. Some British do, you don't, I know. Some British do, but the Germans don't. They want this, and opened the door to a room bigger than this, fitted out like a gym. And they went there to be tortured. They had their sex through being beaten. But there was a wire cupboard about 6 feet high, and something that was a naked man would be locked in it, and poked with something that hurt until he's got his money's worth, and then he'd go. Presumably the girl would be naked. The thing would be laid down on a stretcher raised above the floor with a hole in the middle, then put his private through, and he was strapped somehow underneath, and he was caned. But what happened, and neither of us knew French or German, with rings, parallel bar, and I think horizontal bar, standard things of old fashioned gym that I'd been brought up with, because they'd show off their manhood and skill. But Germans never slept with a girl at all. I think that is right through Germany, because on a previous visit to Germany, we've been given a demonstration of university people doing dueling, which was absolutely cruel, stupid and idiotic, very heavy sword up in the air, all cutting was downwards, and you practiced with your head covered, except your eyes and shoulders and everything, so you couldn't be hurt, and the thing was to protect yourself or slaughter the other person's head. When you could be relied on to keep absolutely still, whatever was happening, only with protection, that if you were still you couldn't be killed. Your face and ears and I think the back of your head were open for being cut, and the idea was not a competition or anything. They'd pair you off with somebody who had the same sort of height or amount of experience, and they were taking, this is 32, they were taking, when you were sufficiently trained of this frightful business of the sun, sword up in the air, you were taken off secretly, because it was forbidden by the peace treaty, to a wood with a doctor, and you did it if you were still, you couldn't be killed, but you would lose your nose or an ear or your cheek or possibly the back of your head. And that the normal thing was to accentuate the wound so that girls would see how that you dueled and were brave and could stand a lot. If you didn't, if you were the one that cut the other bloke, I suppose you could get a certificate that you'd risked being cut, but it was showing off.
And when did you see this?
What?
When did you see this? In 1919?
Friendly Germans showed us that in 1932 in Halle, the university.
1932, that's when you went back to Germany.
I went back in 32, culture exchange.
I'll come back to that, but... anything else you remember about your time in Cologne for the first time?
Nothing else, I don't think. It was a very pleasant life. Oh, yes, I do. Out of it, our regular colonel came, DLI colonel, I think it was.
Do you mean from the 1st or 2nd Battalion?
I don't know which, but I think he was going to take over.
From Crouch.
In any case, I had two rows with him, in a sense. He didn't approve of having a band, it ought to be. And, of course, he's right from peacetime. His idea, he said, was to run a battalion for polo. And Sergeant Major had to do all the work, and polo was the thing. And I couldn't bear the thought of that. I also remember that I'd been told that Bradford had threatened that particular man with his revolver. It may not be true, but I'd been told that. So I had two arguments with him, and then I disliked him. And when he was about to arrive, some week, I demobilized myself and lived somewhere else, so that I'd have departed when he came. And I came down the Rhine to Rotterdam, close to England.
And when was that?
Somewhere about April, 1919, in fact. I'd been on leave and discovered that I could be demobilized because I was due to go to Cambridge in October that year.
How had you arranged for that, to get into Cambridge? When had you sort of taken your exams or got permission?
Oh, I'd taken my exam before leaving school and got an exhibition, I think, called a subsizership, which is really sort of charity, practically. In the old days, it used to be you had to clean shoes and things to be in the college. And then the charity had got a lot, and the money was there. It was just a sort of consolation. And it paid heavily, I mean, it was very helpful, because I had all sorts of adjunct cheap rooms, and I was in college 3 years.